Welcome to the Divided Kingdom, the evening news program of commentary from a Christian viewpoint. This is Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly.
And this is Lou Caverly.
The big news has to continue to be the Islam taking over the world, the Coptic Christians. How much is this going to go on? We don't really know whether we're in the end times for certain, but we can see that this is a very complex issue, and a lot of people are not telling the truth about what the religion of Islam really is. And at the same time, we can't just blame Islam alone. The higher-ups of the global order have a hierarchy that is so diabolically deep and many-layered that we just can't know everything that is being implemented according to that the best enemy money can buy. Donald Call, the columnist, who usually has things I violently disagree with, February 13th said these words: "For a century, the United States and its allies systematically subverted any suggestion of democracy in the region," of course that's the Middle East, "in favor of vicious thugs we could control through bribery. And when a popularly elected politician would surface every once in a while, we'd get rid of him and install our own puppet. Think of the popularly elected Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran, whom the CIA overthrew in 1953, replacing him with a brutal and corrupt Shah. That's the genesis of the mess we're dealing with now. Not Islam, not pure evil, but 100 years of Western domination." We'd have to agree with that. In the 1990s, Lou and I were tutoring a high school girl, and we learned that her father worked, I think, perhaps in the Department of Defense. And at this point, I guess it was really more like the year 2000, 2001, because we brought up the New World Order to him. And he said, "Oh, those are crazies." He says, "But what we do through the world is really something." In other words, he was letting us know that we are the big cop, the bad cop, the rogue cop, even then. And we don't know how much truth we're getting from a global publication like Time magazine. They were giving the roundup of the Arab countries fighting ISIS. And they categorized these countries in this way: Jordan, King Abdullah pledged to retaliate despite the country's relatively limited military reach. The U.S. said on February 3rd that it would boost aid to Jordan by $340 million. United Arab Emirates, which condemned the killing, will still be seeking reassurances from the U.S. after reportedly pausing airstrikes in December over concerns that its pilots were at risk. Then we have Saudi Arabia. ISIS is suspected in a January attack on the border, and newly crowned King Salman, a former defense minister, is expected to keep his air force on the offensive. Bahrain, the Gulf state, a strategic U.S. partner that hosts the U.S.'s Fifth Fleet, has so far played a largely symbolic role in the fight against ISIS, but denounced al-Qasisbeh's murder as despicable. At the same time we're reading that, then we see a newspaper headline with "Obama defends U.S. ties with Saudi Arabia." And in the picture, we've heard that story before about Obama bowing before one of the head Arabian guys. And here he's meeting with the new Saudi Arabian king, and he's leaning in, just looking so intent. We know, too, about Obama's first presidential speech, in which after he took office, he went to Cairo, Egypt, and he insisted upon having members of the Muslim Brotherhood in the front row. And we've commented on this program before, the extent of this influence reaching back into the United States, that we were longtime supporters and devotees of Colonial Williamsburg, but we had to give up our support over a year ago when we saw they were holding an international conference and they were featuring members of the Muslim Brotherhood as if they were advocates of democracy in the world. We have to keep our eyes open. We have to know what's going on. And, of course, the London Independent said Obama considers release of secret sections of report on Saudi Arabia ties to Al-Qaeda. This was February 7th, and this was by Zachary Davies Boren. The White House may declassify still secret sections of an official inquiry into the 9/11 terrorist attacks, which refer to possible Saudi Arabian support. Questions over the 28-page section of the congressional report have been raised this week following the deposition of imprisoned former Al-Qaeda operative Zacharias Moussaoui, in which he claimed major Saudi figures were donors to his group in late 1990s. Saudi officials have denied this. According to White House spokesman Josh Earnest, U.S. intelligence last year began reevaluating the decision to classify the section following a request from Congress, though no timescale for the decision was given. Earnest said the United States and Saudi Arabia maintain a strong counterterrorism relationship as a key element of our broad and strategic partnership. Well, this will be one of those things where the records are sealed, sort of like the Kennedy things for, what, 50 years, 75?
Yeah, this sounds like the kind of thing that will be sealed up for, well, probably for our lifetimes, until the people that finally get to see it note it for any historical interest and have no emotional ties to it whatsoever.
And the power magnets will continue on. We can't really confirm this, and it was said on a program that I'm still evaluating, the Stone Kingdom, because as listeners to this program know, we are not anti-Semitic, and we do not advocate replacement theology in any way, because we don't engineer what the Old Testament says about God's everlasting covenant with the Jewish people, and whether or not the state of Israel is a New World Order state, and it largely is, because we talked here about them trying to get rid of cash. So a lot of things are going on there all the time. All the countries of the world, the major countries, Britain, America, and, of course, Israel, their intelligence organizations work together. And, of course, there's a lot of New World Order stuff going on there. But at the same time, on this Stone Kingdom program, and again, I've heard things that make me think it is advocating replacement theology, and it certainly is advocating that kind of kingdom idea in the identity, which says that a lot of the Israelites went to Britain and Wales and other places in Europe, and so that all of us who are Anglo-American, basically, we would be really Israelites. We are the modern Israel. And this has a very pompous kind of thing that I've never really liked, because none of us is any better than anyone else. God created all mankind, and he sent his son to die for all the world, not a certain aspect of people. And we did not replace Israel completely, the Israel of the Old Testament, because God said he has an everlasting covenant. So in my mind, I think it is very possible that a lot of Israelites did go to Europe, and I think there is truth in this. I think about my husband, Lou Caverly. He has an ancestor that has been traced back to Scotland in the year 1116. Now, think about that. That's a long time ago, and that ancestor did not even have a last name. The last names were not used. Where did that ancestor come from? My own ancestors in Ireland, a number of them. Where did they come from originally? So it's very possible that there is some truth in this, that the tribe of Dan left. Think of the Danube River. But we also heard a very, very important talk on True News. And just now, I'm not sure, I think perhaps the clergyman's name was Church. Lou, do you remember the one who talked about the tribe of Dan, that he thought the Antichrist would come through that? I believe it may have been J.R. Church. I hope I'm accurate. But anyway, Rick Wiles said this was a very classic interview with a very, very high-statured person in the church world. So he was highly respected. And so when we're looking at all this, it is all very complex. Who's who in the Jewish world. There are some Illuminati Jews. We're sure of that, too. But there are those people who believe in the Old Testament, and they're the ones God still has a covenant with. So with all that going on, that was a preface to what this Dr. James Bergamin said. He talked about the connections of Mitch McConnell with his father-in-law, who has a container and shipping business, and it largely deals with Asia. And he alleged that this father-in-law gave millions of dollars to Mitch McConnell and his wife, who is the daughter, you see, of this man who has the shipping. And he claims that in Colombia, he has seen an article that when they opened the container, there was hidden cocaine. So the point of that was that there is still this global, elite, worldwide drug cartel. It goes back all the time, all the way to the opium wars. So the royalty of England, the royalty of some other nations, we don't know who all is running this. But we know that it is still very, very active. It wasn't just Bill Clinton there and all those disappearing people, those people who died mysterious deaths there in Arkansas at the time there were these allegations of the cocaine running. No, it's bad, and it's getting a lot worse in your hometown and mine. And we see now that there are a number of governors who are banding together to fight against this heroin coming in. So you need to put this in the deepest prayer. But again, it shows us, if these allegations are true about McConnell, it shows us how very sold out the political leaders are at the top. Please do not put your faith in them. But try to work with your local officials. Some of them are good, and some of them are trying to do something. For instance, like the new governor here in Maryland, Hogan, he wants to reform the gerrymandering that went on because all of the Democrats, and this is a largely Democrat state, they pulled this big fast one. They actually split Frederick County, Maryland, into two districts, and they ousted a long-time person who was really, really a wonderful legislator, and you know, this was not very good that they did this. Right now, his name isn't coming to me. You remember, Lou? You don't either. It will. It'll come to us. Yes, Roscoe Bartlett. How could we forget? He sent a lot of apples from Maryland over to those troops in Iraq. Was such a great, wonderful, wonderful constitutional loving guy. And if you don't know what gerrymandering is, it's a portmanteau word. It mixed two things. It mixed 19th century Massachusetts Governor Eldridge Gerry's name and salamander. The Boston Gazette coined this term to show how awkwardly shaped the district map created by Gerry appeared to be. The shape of the district resembled a salamander, while some say Maryland's 3rd District looks like a praying mantis or a broken-winged pterodactyl. I'd have to wonder about that, whether it's almost like a phoenix. We might be getting another message. So, actually, Maryland state legislative districts are less gerrymandered than the state's congressional districts because the Maryland Constitution says each legislative district shall consist of adjoining territory, be compact in form, and of substantially equal population. Due regard shall be given to natural boundaries and the boundaries of political subdivisions. So the state's highest court rejected the 2002 redistricting plan and drew its own map for Maryland's legislative districts. But the U.S. Constitution does not require congressional districts to be compact. So you see, that's how they did this, and it's not very good. But when we get back now to this idea of Islam, it might be that the powers of the world feel that they have Islam totally under control. They're doing their own machinations if they want to take us into war in the Middle East. Whatever they want to do, they may think they're controlling ISIS, but they may get a shock down the road. because God is removing a lot of protection from this country. And I think the only way any of us who are part of this remnant are going to be protected is if we do make Jesus Christ first every day, and that we do ask him to show us our sins, and that we repent with humility. He hates the sin of pride. He hates self-righteousness. If you think you know it all, you don't. None of us does. So we really have to take this Islam threat seriously. First of all, we have something that I believe is about the Islamic Tribunal confirmed in Texas. And then Lou has some other very, very shocking things to tell us about. But let's kind of go into this. Lou, why don't you tell us about this? Bob Price, January 27th, 2015, Islamic Tribunal confirmed in Texas. Attorney claims it's voluntary.
An Islamic tribunal using Sharia law in Texas has been confirmed by Breitbart, Texas. The tribunal is operating as a non-profit organization in Dallas. One of the attorneys for the tribunal said participation and acceptance of the tribunal's decisions are, quote-unquote, voluntary. Breitbart, Texas, spoke with one of the, quote, judges, unquote, Dr. Tahir El Badawi. He said the tribunal operates under Sharia law as a form of, quote, non-binding dispute resolution, unquote. Al-Badawi said the organization is a tribunal, not arbitration. A tribunal is defined by Merriam-Webster's dictionary as a, quote, court or forum of justice, unquote. The four Islamic attorneys call themselves judges, not arbitrators. Al-Badawi said the tribunal follows Sharia law to resolve civil disputes in family and business matters. He said they also resolve workplace disputes. In matters of divorce, Al-Badawi said that, quote, while participation in the tribunal is voluntary, a married couple cannot be considered divorced by the Islamic community unless it is granted by the tribunal, unquote. He compared their divorce, known as talaq, as something similar to the Catholic practice of annulment, in that the Church does not recognize civil divorce proceedings as ending a marriage. He also said there is a difference between how a man and a woman can request a divorce under their system. Quote, the husband can request the divorce directly from the tribunal, Al-Badawi stated. And he went on, the wife must go to an imam who will request the divorce for her, unquote. He called it two paths to the same result. The practice of kula, spelled K-H-U-L-A, is the process where a wife can initiate a divorce proceeding and where the husband can agree to the divorce in exchange for a financial compensation. It appears the wife must agree to give up any claim to the dower that was not already paid, or to return it if it has already been paid. Once the financial issues are resolved, the husband can then proclaim the talaq, that is, the divorce. Al-Badawi said they follow Texas family law when it comes to child support, visitation, and custody. He said that in most cases, custody of children is awarded to the mother. Breitbart, Texas, asked what happens when there is a conflict between Sharia law and Texas law. Al-Badawi said most of the time the laws are in agreement. When pushed further, he admitted that, quote, we follow Sharia law, unquote. However, he explained, quote, if the parties are not satisfied with the tribunal's decision, they do not have to accept it, and they can take the matter to Texas civil courts, unquote. He did not say what the social ramifications of rejecting the judge's decision would be, and that is the Islamic judges, the tribunal. The website for the Islamic Tribunal states, quote, the courts of the United States of America are costly and consist of ineffective lawyers. Discontent with the legal system leads many Muslims in America to postpone justice in the world that is in this world, and opt for an audience on the day of judgment, unquote. It goes on to state, it is with this issue that Muslims here in America are obligated to find a way to solve conflicts and disputes according to the principles of Islamic law and its legal heritage of fairness and justice in a manner that is reasonable and cost-effective. In explaining Sharia law, the website states, quote, stoning adulterers, cutting off the hands, polyandry, and the like, all can be traced in the relevant literature and can be explained in the Islamic legal mentality and rational context in fairness and justice. And that was a parenthetical insert there, are mainly a part of Islamic criminal law. In fact, criminal law within Islam only makes up a fraction of the Sharia. It is unscholarly and unfair to generalize that type of understanding, that is, criminal law, to compromise the whole of Islamic law if we stick to speaking in technical terms, unquote. The website lists four judges, Imam Yusuf Z. Kavaki, Imam Bushahed Bakhak, Imam Zia ul-Haq Sheikh, and Dr. Al-Badawi. It states the Islamic tribunal resolves business disputes, divorce or talaq cases, community problems, serious family problems, and kula. Al-Badawi restated several times that participation in the tribunal is voluntary. However, he would not discuss what happens to someone who did not follow their rulings.
We have to ask again why our president is so pro-Islam. And Georgianne Geyer, a foreign correspondent and commentator on international affairs for more than 40 years, in her column February 13th, had this to say, prayer breakfast remarks ill-timed. Washington, the last few years have not marked a high point for Christians across the world. In Iraq, entire Chaldean Catholic towns dating from centuries ago have been burned and destroyed by the Islamic State, or ISIS. In Syria, rare villages that still spoke the language of Christ, Aramaic, have been under attack by radical Islamists. Most Muslim countries still forbid Christian churches or meeting places. Saudi Arabia would not even allow Christian services when American troops were stationed there in 1991 and after to protect the monarchy. And in Egypt, the most, quote, secular of the Arab states, church burnings and murderous attacks on Christian Copts exploded after the 2011, quote, Arab Spring. And now there is President Barack Obama. At this year's National Prayer Breakfast early in February, the president exercised his tendency to praise Islam as a, quote, religion of peace, and to warn American Christian sinners to watch our manners to an extreme dimension. We had better not, quote, get on our high horse, end of quote. Obama scolded about riding across any deserts to destroy ISIS, but we should, quote, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ, end of quote. As if that were not enough, to the list of sinful deeds and intentions of Christianity, he added that, quote, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ, end of quote. By that time, if audience members didn't choose to go home and have a drink rather than stay for the summing up of the sermon, they're not the kind of Christians I'd deem to spend my time with. All of us Christians, except a small percentage today, are aware of the, shall we say, blind spots or dark times in the history of Christianity. But the Crusades were centuries ago, and the Inquisition, founded in 1478 by Spanish Catholic monarchs, was over by 1834. It is worth adding that slavery, that abomination of the New World, was aided and abetted in Africa by Arab and African tribal leaders and traders, and was finally abolished only when the British Royal Navy, in effect Christians, no longer allowed slave ships to move across the Atlantic. Christianity has erred and sinned, but it has also righted itself and forced liberal change upon itself Its great cleansing was during the Reformation and the Enlightenment, which introduced the beginnings of the modern age by shedding old prejudices. The problem is that Islam has never had either Reformation or Enlightenment, and most modern theologians believe it is in need of both. The result, then, is that while Islam has slid around the circles of the modern world, Christianity has continued to grow. And for President Obama to compare events of 500 or 1,000 years ago in Christianity with actions today of the Islamic State or the Shiite Iraqi militias or the Iranian Revolutionary Guards or the Yemeni Houthis or the Nigerian Boko Haram is simply illogical and essentially historically dishonest. Such comparisons might also be seen as self-hatred by certain people. The least one might feel in the realm of taking pride in one's own religion is that Christianity has, throughout its development, questioned and cautiously recreated its message, whereas so much of Islam is haunted by the 7th century, pulling it back because any movement forward is blocked. So, actually, this gives us a little idea here of the contrast between Islam and Christianity as religions. And then Georgianne Geyer sums it up with, President Obama obviously did not intend his remarks to harm Christians anywhere, but only to face the world and history with an open mind. However, at a time like this, when many Muslims in the Middle East resent American troops, it is simply not the better part of wisdom to underline their perceptions and prejudices. Let's get the real truth here from Lou. It's pretty shocking. We've heard Waleed Shobat talk, I think, on the Southwest Radio Church Ministry program and on True News with Rick Wiles. Such a wonderful man converted to Christianity. And I think when he was a child, he had to be a suicide bomber. He had to be doing these things from the time he was about 7, if I have the right person in mind. So, Lou, let's get the real truth of what's happening.
Ex-Muslim tells of the literal slaughterhouses where kidnapped Christians are dissected and their organs sold to Islamic nations. This is by Onan Coker, Dateline, 22nd January 2015. This may be one of the most disgusting things I've ever had to report on. The intrepid and brave Waleed and Theodore Shobat are reporting on a story out of Albania that has been breaking over the last couple of months. Muslim Albanians in Kosovo are apparently kidnapping Christians in an effort to harvest and sell their organs before killing them. A Serbian Christian and former Special Forces officer tipped them off to the insidious story. Quote, they abduct people in Kosovo, Serbian people, in some cases Albanian people, and they take their organs. They torture the people and take their organs while they are still alive. He also said that the victims are usually, quote, Christian Serbs, young women and men, and also children, unquote. While the story may seem unbelievable, this isn't the first reporting being done on the terrifying subject. A documentary produced in Germany also told the story of Albanian terrorists victimizing Christian Serbs to sell their organs, and it has a website listed there. Even with multiple accounts and other international outlets corroborating these stories, the Shobats have faced criticism and disbelief. Yet, when Shobat.com was the first to report on the human slaughterhouses in Syria, in which we obtained one man's account who gave much detail on the operation regarding Christians and Shiites who were also slaughtered and mutilated, people still questioned it until, of course, we obtained original source accounts with extremely troubling footage to back up one man's testimony, and it all checked out. Shobat.com also reported on how Syrian Muslims would put their children into rape sessions for money and sell their organs. We also reported on how the Muslim jihadists in Syria take Christians, drain their blood, and sell vials of blood for $100,000 each to Saudi Arabia because the Arab Muslims have a demonic superstition that if they wash their hands with Christian blood, they can obtain salvation. We also reported on Islamic cannibalism. And so many doubted until, of course, the truth came out on film when a terrorist ate a human heart and when he showed translated footage on El Nas, an Egyptian major media which sanctioned the practice. We deal with rescuing Christians, and being at the tip of the spear, we hear of horrific stories. Folks who do not deal with evil and see it firsthand have a tendency not to believe until they are in the midst of it.
Yes, and Lou, I'd have to just interject it. Hearing an interesting interview with Rick Wiles and Dr. Peter Hammond. Dr. Peter Hammond is just a wonderful, wonderful, totally respected clergyman who has been working in Africa for decades. I think his ministry is Frontline Ministries. And he told Rick the bombshell that Idi Amin had killed a certain high churchman and eaten him. So this thing is not just here today, is it, Lou? It's been around.
Oh, yes, it's been around for a long time, even as recently as perhaps in the 1880s, 1890s. If you look in any good source in the on Khartoum, which is, I guess, in the today's state of Sudan, the Muslims rose up, slaughtered the English garrison there, including General Gordon, and it took Lord Kitchener at the Battle of Omdurman to finally defeat them. But they proclaimed that this leader of theirs was a mighty, a holy man who would, you know, usher in a new age. But, of course, that was quickly put down. But that's the kind of uprisings that have occurred throughout history with the Muslims. A religion of peace? Not all the time, anyway. Going on with this article, there is such a thing as pure evil, dark, remorseless, and hideously ugly. And instead of trusting our reports, the world still accuses us, not the evil ones who perpetrated such evil. The Shobats have worked hard to uncover the hidden violence of Islamic terrorism, the evil that even the terrorists don't yet want the world to see. And for their efforts, they are scorned by the mainstream media. While the violence and depravity that they have reported on may seem impossibly evil, it is of vital importance that we understand it is really happening. It is our duty to tell the world about the atrocities being committed in the name of Islam. The many thousands of victims deserve justice, but even more, they deserve to be remembered. And it mentions below is the first-hand video that was smuggled out of the slaughterhouses and the Shabbats released to the world. Please be advised the videos are incredibly graphic and not suitable for everyone. And I won't read the extensive webpage, but it's listed here for anyone that would want to see it. And this is from Eagle Rising. And again by Onan Coca, C-O-C-A, for anyone that would like to pursue that further.
Very, very shocking, all of these things that are going on. And in our own country, some shocking things are going on there. We have a lot of our liberties under attack. And this was the Rutherford Institute, December 28, 2014. And this is coming out of the Fort Fairfield Journal. In a blow to the constitutional rights of citizens, the U.S. Supreme Court had 8-1 a decision in Helen versus State of North Carolina that police officers are permitted to violate American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights if a violation results in a reasonable mistake about the law on the part of police. Acting contrary to the venerable principle that ignorance of the law is no excuse, the court ruled that evidence obtained by police during a traffic stop that was not legally justified can be used to prosecute the person if police are reasonably mistaken that the person had violated the law. The Rutherford Institute had asked the U.S. Supreme Court to hold law enforcement officials accountable to knowing and abiding by the rule of law. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, the court's lone dissenter, warned that the court's ruling means further eroding of the Fourth Amendment's protection of civil liberties in a context where that protection has already been worn down. By refusing to hold police accountable to knowing and abiding by the rule of law, the Supreme Court has given government officials a green light to routinely violate the law, said John W. Whitehead, president of the Rutherford Institute and author of the award-winning book, A Government of Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. Quote, "This case may have started out with an improper traffic stop, but where it will end, given the turbulence of our age, with its police overreach, military training drills on American soil, domestic surveillance, SWAT team raids, asset forfeiture, wrongful convictions, and corporate corruption, is not hard to predict. This ruling is what I would call a one-way, non-refundable ticket to the police state." And Lou, I believe you have an update on the Sandy Hook situation. On February 7th, we reported that a lawsuit was being brought, and there was a lot of investigation going on from people like highly respected author Jim Fetzer. This thing appears to have been a drill.
This also is from the Fort Fairfield Journal, written by David Duchesne. Sandy Hook lawsuit author arrested. New London, Connecticut. The man who filed a federal lawsuit against the mainstream television news media for complicity in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting hoax was recently arrested under mysterious circumstances. According to court documents from the state of Connecticut's judicial branch, William Shanley, 64, was arrested on December 31, 2014, by New London police for allegedly attempting to commit assault against a public safety EMT worker, a Class C felony. He is also charged with interfering with officer resisting arrest, a Class A misdemeanor, and breach of peace, second degree, a Class B misdemeanor. Shanley has pled not guilty to all charges. The arrest has curious timing, since it occurred just days after Shanley filed a complaint in the U.S. District Court for the District of Connecticut, alleging various news that his television news networks and newspaper publishing companies were involved in a conspiracy to help rogue agents within the U.S. and local governments stage a mass shooting and present it as real at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown in December 2012. This has led some to believe the arrest to be contrived in order to at once cause a chilling effect against those who would challenge the government's and mainstream media's quote-unquote official accounting of the event, and at the same time reduce the effectiveness of Shanley, since he is representing himself, pro se, in a district court lawsuit against the mainstream media giants. The Fort Fairfield Journal attempted twice to contact the New London Police Department to request a copy of the arresting officer's incident report, but the police department has failed to respond or to provide any further information. Shanley is currently being held in $50,000 bail, which he had not been able to raise, so he remains in jail. His pretrial hearing is scheduled for February 4th at 10 a.m. at the GA 10 Court, in New London.
But this chilling effect can't completely shut off the truth. And no, I think that the internet, for all the reasons that I don't want to have it in my home, I have had to admit that there is a great good that has come out of it. Alex Jones's program grew by leaps and bounds to where perhaps 3 million listeners now hear it. Not everything can be covered up anymore. There's just too much truth getting out there. So it won't matter what they do to this Shanley. More people now know. We know the precedent of Private Jessica Lynch and Jerry Bruckheimer's theatrical presentation of her heroism and how Alex Jones advised her, you better tell the truth if you want to live. So she did. And that came out. The Pentagon Papers, a long time ago, but they did come out. God will not let the evil always triumph and not come out to his light. That's just the way the world works. And in the meantime, we have to deal with what David Duchaine in the Fort Fairfield Journal calls the Amstoppo update. And we're looking back now. We're getting kind of a kaleidoscopic view of back into 2014, as far back as July, and we're going to give you some of these items. And you can think about, are in the old America or the new America? And if you appreciate this program, we hope that you will write to us. And if you want to contribute anything, you can send a money order or a check made out to WWCR, not to us directly. You can write to us at Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at the Divided Kingdom, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. That's B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, as in the Bible, Maryland, 21609. Amstoppo update. July 5th, William Binney, one of the highest-level whistleblowers to ever emerge from the NSA, spoke at a conference in London organized by the Center for Investigative Journalism and revealed at least 80% of fiber-optic cables globally go via the U.S. This is no accident and allows the U.S. to view all communication coming in. At least 80% of all audio calls, not just metadata, are recorded and stored in the U.S. The NSA lies about what it stores, end of quote. The NSA will soon be able to collect 966 exabytes a year, the total of Internet traffic annually. Former Google head Eric Schmidt once argued that the entire amount of knowledge from the beginning of humankind until 2003 amounted to only 5 exabytes. July 15th. The U.S. Marine Corps has enlisted the help of a four-legged robotic mule known as the Legged Squad Support System, or LS-3, and is taking part in military exercises in Hawaii. LS-3 is designed to carry 400 pounds and travel 20 miles without refueling. The robot is operated by a Marine with a sensor strapped to his or her foot. LS-3 follows the Marine using computer vision. LS-3 was invented by robotics firm Boston Dynamics and has undergone 3 years of testing by U.S. Marines. It is expected the robot will eventually be autonomous, armed, and used against the American people who do not fall in lockstep behind the authoritarian government that is now developing in the District of Columbia. July 16th, a 49-year-old Connecticut man faces threatening charges after a woman told police he stabbed a watermelon in a, quote, passive-aggressive manner. The Register Citizen of Torrington reports Carmine Cervellino of Thomaston was arraigned Monday on charges of threatening and disorderly conduct. He was released after posting a $500 bond. July 16th. Indiana's Homeland Security Director, John Hill, said that domestic surveillance drones should be deployed during any man-made or natural disaster, giving authorities key info they may need during times of crisis, the ultimate goal being the construction of a super-spy robotic control grid to snoop on the private lives of all Americans. Of course, you remember that we've been reporting about these blimps that they are now being put up, and that they can see over about three states, at least three states, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and more. So I think this thing was a preview there, this little article about July 16th. July 16th also, armed Homeland Security agents are now conducting, quote, community outreach programs based around maintaining a visible presence in order to, quote, let people know they're in the area. News channel WNCT9 received calls from alarmed residents in response to reports of numerous DHS vehicles parked outside a bankruptcy court in Greenville, North Carolina. However, the, quote, heavy presence was not because of any specific threat associated with the building. I wonder if this is a rehearsal drill for when the economic collapse comes, Lou.
Well, it could be. You get the impression that they want to make doggone sure that they know what everybody's doing so they can jump on the what they might like to call perpetrators of whatever it might be at the first possible moment. And this is the kind of police state we're getting into. No wonder the David Duchaine calls it American Gestapo, Amstapo. August 26, 2014, the federal government is spending nearly $1 million to create an online database that will track misquote-unquote misinformation and hate speech on Twitter. Misinformation is any information that conflicts with the government's ideology and position on a matter. August 27, 2014, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, part of the Department of Transportation, published last week an, quote, advanced notice of proposed rulemaking, unquote, on, quote, vehicle-to-vehicle communications, unquote, to allow government monitoring of the location and speed of every vehicle in the country. In announcing its proposed rulemaking, NHTSA is stressing its intention to protect the, quote-unquote, privacy of American drivers. However, this is from the same government that admittedly tracks and archives every phone call, text, and email Americans generate every minute of every day. August 29, 2014, FISA court twists Patriot Act to pretend it's okay to spy on Americans based on their constitutionally protected speech. September 3, 2014, the Pentagon wants a plane that can attain incredibly fast speeds while also possessing the ability to hover. The experimental Phantom Swift X plane will fulfill that role. And now Boeing has secured a $9 million to continue work it started roughly 1 year ago. The idea for the aircraft, which resulted from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that is DARPA's VTOL X-plane competition in 2013, will eventually be powered by an all-electric drive and measure 13 meters nose to tail and 15 meters from wingtip to wingtip. The finished product is also expected to be used to further the U.S. government's efforts at spying on Americans and eventually using automated onboard computer systems to target and kill government dissenters. September 7, 2014. Exclusive photographs provided to InfoWars from a local business owner show an FBI PowerPoint presentation placing quote-unquote homegrown groups at the top of the agency's terror watch list. According to the business owner, the FBI agent, referred to as Special Agent Johnson, completely glossed over the looming ISIS threat to instead focus on American citizens as the real enemies to the U.S. government.
I hope you paid attention to that last item. That was very crucial, I think. Building the dossier on all of us, Mr. and Mrs. America, Tea Party or not Tea Party. August 14th, the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration has been secretly paying an Amtrak employee more than $800,000 over the past 20 years to steal passenger data that the agency could have obtained for free. An unnamed secretary working with an Amtrak train and engine crew gave the agency private rider information in exchange for $854,460 since 1995. When the agency could have obtained the desired data for free through its existing affiliation with a joint drug enforcement task force, according to Amtrak internal investigators. August 15th. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick has signed into law a measure giving police chiefs authority to turn a resident's request to buy a rifle or shotgun if they believe the person may be a danger. The measure broadens the authority of police, who are already allowed to deny sales of handguns to people who failed background checks. The new measure gives a police chief 90 days to petition a court to deny a firearms identification card to someone the chief believes to be unfit. August 15th, the Department of Homeland Security's computer algorithm, MonsterMind, Oh, how about that, Lou?
That's quite a name, isn't it? Monster Mind.
Let me do that again. Department of Homeland Security, I'm just stunned by that. Computer algorithm Monster Mind is a new autonomous cyber weapon system developed by the National Security Agency. And according to Edward Snowden, it's capable of not only intercepting every single digital communication within the United States, but it can automatically detect and launch retaliatory strikes without any human involvement if a threat has been identified. During the interview, Snowden explained a previously unrevealed NSA cyber weapon called Monster Mind, which has the capability to detect incoming cyber attacks and retaliate automatically without any human supervision. Such a program has dangerous global reactionary implications, according to Snowden, who said such cyber attacks are often routed through computers inside innocent and unsuspecting third-party countries. These attacks can be spoofed, Snowden said. You can have someone sitting in China, for example, making it appear that one of these attacks is originating in Russia, and then we end up shooting back at a Russian hospital. What happens next? August 15th. Since 2006, the Pentagon has distributed 432 mine-resistant armored vehicles to local police departments. It has also doled out more than 400 other armored vehicles, 500 aircraft, and 93,000 machine guns. But there's still more.
September 3rd, 2014. The day after HISD police officers wrestled a 10th grade girl to the hallway floor of Sam Houston High School, the girl and her family protested in front of the campus demanding an investigation and an apology. In cell phone video first aired on KHOU Tuesday night, three HISD police officers surrounded Ixell Perez. Two of them have her pinned to the floor face down. One officer has his knee pressed to the side of her head. Quote, both of the cops just tackled her down to the floor. They put her knee on her head, and after that, they just arrested her. Took her phone, said student Gustavo Lucio, who took the video on his cell phone. The cop just said, you can't use your phone. And after that, no words, no nothing. Just actions. Grabbed her. Threw her down. September 10th, 2014. A Florida small business owner said Monday the city of Ocala has threatened to fine him if he does not immediately take down a Gadsden flag currently displayed outside his store. Gear Barrel, I guess that's the name of the store, Gear Barrel owner Keith Greenberg told The Blaze that the city said he was permitted to fly the American flag outside his store, but prohibited from displaying anything else outside his business, which specializes in selling knives. September 10, 2014. A 24-year U.S. Army officer was denied entry to his daughter's high school because his uniform may, quote, offend another student, unquote, according to the school's security. After trying to escort his daughter into Rochester Adams High School in Rochester, Michigan, Lieutenant Colonel Sherwood Baker was told by security that if he wanted to enter the school, he would have to go home and change out of his uniform. Quote, before he was allowed in, the security guard stopped him and said, sorry, you're not allowed in the school, unquote. Baker's wife, Rachel Prehadson, told My Fox Detroit, quote, security told him men and women in uniform weren't allowed because it may offend another student, unquote. September 16, 2014. The FBI has fully rolled out a new biometric identification system that includes facial recognition technology. The FBI, working with the Criminal Justice Information Services Division, says the next-generation identification system is now fully operational. The system is designed to expand biometric identification capabilities across the country and eventually replace the FBI's current fingerprint system. September 15th, 2014. Los Angeles Unified School District police officials are considering whether they need the armored vehicle and grenade launchers they received from the U.S. military. The military hardware at the disposal of the Los Angeles Unified School District police officers includes a 20-foot-long, 14-ton armored transport vehicle, much like the ones used to move Marines in Iraq combat zones. The armored vehicle is worth $733,000, and the school district's police force got it from the government for free. How would LAUSD use such a vehicle? For us, and this is in quotes, for us that vehicle would be used for extraordinary circumstances, unquote, LAUSD Police Chief Steve Zipperman said. The armored vehicle, which is stored at a secret location, has been in the department's possession since July.
And listeners, all of these things that are increasingly beginning to hamper our freedom are nothing compared to what those little unborn babies face. We recall how several years ago when we heard during the presidential campaign that Romney had invested in a company that was connected with Stericycle, I believe, and that is that company that has the fleet of trucks and picks up the aborted fetal remains, and then, you know, then big business takes over. I don't know who buys all of it, but it's not good. So Lou and I were out on Route 50, that large highway that takes people from suburban Washington to Ocean City every summer. Millions of people travel this route, Route 50, over the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. So we were sort of turning to get back on Route 50, and we had been hearing all these things. And all of a sudden, it was like a TV screen in the front windshield. I said, oh, my gosh, Lou, there it is. It was fueling up at a gas station. There was this big white truck, Stericycle. And it makes you sick all over when we think of what's happening to these little babies because they're human beings. And this police state that we have to endure is getting worse in proportion to the silence from the churches. Where are the clergy? They're not out on the streets saying we must end abortion. No, they aren't. They're too busy instituting their new same-sex marriage programs in the churches. And we've heard that at least Franklin Graham took a stand to talk about Islam. And where are the others? Where are the other pastors who are saying anything about those hundreds of thousands of Christians who have been slaughtered in the Middle East? A few are. A few have talked about it. A few take a stand. But we are in a time of growing apathy and lethargy. Lou and I commented that among our friends, the ones who are very educated and pretty shrewd, they don't want to know. They don't want to know. They spurned our work. From the time we began in 2003, they spurned it. Then the ones who, you know, just really do want to know, they're you. On the air, we come to you. And we know that some of you live in the South, some of you are up in the Northeast, and some of you are in Africa. Pastor Mike, we haven't forgotten you. We're snowed in. We didn't have any money. We can't get a study Bible to you yet, but we are praying for you. Everyone needs to pray for those Christians in Nigeria. Please do, and we'll hope to talk to you again, probably next evening. So thank you, and God bless all of you. Good night for the Divided Kingdom.